Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Okay. I like that one. Just, she tries out a new one every episode. It's great.
Every episode.
We're trying them out. We're doing season one, episode 23 today, The Nana. Very, very excited about this episode. What happens in this episode is it's Passover for the Coens this year. The Nana is coming to visit. The critical and scary woman they expect to show up is instead a much kinder, nicer, warmer Nana. And Sandy's determined to find out why. He soon learns that her behavior changes due to her terminal cancer prognosis. Meanwhile, Ryan searches for Marissa, who has gone missing after learning about her mother and Luke. And Ryan finds her hiding out at Teresa's house in Chino, directed by Michael Lang, written by Alan Heinberg and Josh Schwartz.
I'm so excited for this episode. It's really just a great episode. It encompasses comedy and tragedy and theatrical people. And speaking of theatrical people, we have a very special guest. This amazing person is an award-winning actor, singer, songwriter, musician, dancer, entrepreneur, and activist. She made her Broadway debut in 2015 in Spring Awakenings and has appeared in the series You and Modern Love. I just watched it this week. She and her cast just won a Grammy for Alanis Morissette's Broadway show Jagged Little Pill. She is nominated, as of us speaking right now, for a Tony for the same show as Best Featured Artist. Of course, we know her and her brother Jamie as the organizers of the epic Capture the Flag game at Camp Gallagher. She is the daughter of Paula and Peter, and she is here to share her unique OC experience, Catherine Gallagher. Welcome, Broadway.
Hello. That was the best intro I've ever gotten. Ever. I want my Capture the Flag skills to be mentioned in every podcast I do for the rest of time.
Yeah, right, that's just right, like on your resume or whatever it is, anytime you lead with that.
Yeah, it's the first line.
So happy to have you here, and it's so surreal to see you as such an amazing, accomplished young woman. And we knew you when you were back when. Back when, and we knew you then. But it's just so cool to see you, so beautiful and just so amazing, and we just can't wait to talk to you.
Oh my God, thank you for having me.
So that we have different guests, and we want to keep it in the family. So and it's not just, you know, this episode shows what can happen. I mean, how families are affected, say, by someone who's sick, but we're talking about our lives in a way that how your life was affected by your dad being on this very popular show. But before we dive into all that, I just really want to tell you, it's been so much fun for me to, you know, read up on your life. I'm totally obsessed with you. I'm looking up to you as an adult. I mean, just to name a few things, you wrote this beautiful essay about your grandmother, Paulette, who I didn't know was a ballet or a dancer, and she danced at Radio City Music Hall. And, I mean, talk about the first person on stage in your family before your dad even.
Oh, yeah. She started the trend long before my dad came around.
Wow. That is really cool.
And then the New York Times just did a piece on you and your beautiful apartment I think you're in right now that your mom helped you design. And to talk about your Tony nomination. Tell us all about that.
Well, yeah, it's been a really weird year. I think that, you know, I started doing Jagged Little Pill. I started working on the show actually 2017 while I was filming You. So the two of them were sort of happening in tandem. There's two episodes where my character disappears and goes to a grief counseling camp. And that is also just because I had to do the workshop of Jagged Little Pill. So they were kind enough to let me go for that. But so that journey started a long time ago, and my role started as like an ensemble member, and then the sort of storyline kept growing and growing, and it found, you know, the creative team was really sort of listening to the audience and watching it and started developing it. It turned into a principal and all these things. And so to say that like a Tony nomination was really far from the forefront of my mind is like the understatement of the century. That was just like, you know, I mean, well, so Rachel, it's kind of like, you know, you started off on the OC. It was supposed to be like a recurring guest star moment, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like insane. And then, you know, imagining the OC without Summer. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's not possible.
Aww.
And so it's kind of crazy, like, you know, to see things like in the New York Times. It's literally behind me because I have to take my mom a copy. And to see it say like, Tony nominee is like, and to have it all happen in isolation, you know, on my couch while I was watching Miss Americana, of course, the Taylor Swift movie. And it all just happened in this sort of isolated moment. So it's just so surreal, and everything feels surprising. I had a fitting for my Tony dress, which is like, I can't believe I even get to go. And like, I've never been invited before. Even when I performed a Spring Awakening, they didn't invite us. They hit us in the basement, and then we came out and sang.
Back
to the basement. So it's very exciting.
Oh, I'm excited to see the dress. That's exciting. That's like crazy. The best part, right? I mean, the fittings and things. I mean, I always loved that. That is so cool. And congratulations. That is just so rad.
How did it feel to win the Grammy? I follow you on TikTok and Instagram, and I saw the moment actually, but how did that feel?
So crazy. That is something, I mean, you guys have known me since I was 10 years old. Like, I have been singing my entire life, and really, like, the Grammy has been the sort of, I mean, it is, it's like the thing that when you sing as a kid that you don't stop dreaming about. And you know, we knew it was going to be virtual. So I had two of my friends from the show, everyone that was sort of available, get tested and come up for the weekend to Connecticut, Camp Gallagher round two. And we made like Grammy themed snacks. And like, I made a cake that said like, congratulations on being a Grammy with a blank space. So winner or loser, we were going to celebrate it.
Oh.
And then, and then I made everyone these like nightgowns. And I, on the back, it said, this is my first Grammy gown. Because, you know, you're at home, so you wear a nightgown at home. So it was very, I really tried to be festive about it. And then watching us actually win was like, what? Like, are you sure? And then like we get an award, which is so like, have that. Like, what?
That has to be, the coolest feeling ever. I mean, what an accomplishment. That is just so cool. And I mean, your dad must be so proud.
Oh my God. Well, he's my date to the Tonys. So I'm really excited for that. He's very proud. He's very, you know, it's a really interesting position because he's been doing this forever. And I think for him, he knows how much heartache can come with choosing this profession. And so every time there's something that like seems exciting, or I almost get a job, and he's the one that's like, well, you know, you did your best and that's all you can do. And if it doesn't happen, and you might not win, and if you don't win, or if you, and so he's always sort of very realistic, honestly, which is a really nice sort of perspective to have and sort of a shoulder to lean on. But I think, you know, pre the Tony nomination, it was very like, you did your job. You get to do the show. Like, that's the award. And then when it happened and we were all kind of in disbelief, he was watching his, like, you know, I think he was more nervous about me feeling disappointed in any way than like anything he's ever felt. So watching him cry was like, oh my, it was just really cool.
Oh man.
It was really cool.
I remember the first time I met you, and I feel like it was, you were already at the age of 10 or 11, the veteran of youth theater, and I brought CG to come see you. You were seeing Mama Rose from Gypsy and just belting it out. And I was like, who's this 10-year-old singing Mama Rose? Everything's coming up roses. And CG was enamored. And I mean, over the years, I know that Ben came to see you. Adam came to see you. Didn't we see you at the Whiskey or something once?
Yes, my first show ever. I was 15 okay. years old.
Wow.
It was awesome. Yes. So, I mean, yeah, we used to get together a lot. We came to your place for Thanksgiving. We, you know, and you got to see, I mean, she was totally enamored with you, but you probably.
She's like my little sister. Yeah. It's like we were the kids. We were just like the two little rascals, I feel like, you know, while everyone was working, sneaking around, you know, in everyone's dressing rooms and causing mayhem.
So you were 10, you know, and you grew up in New York City, but your dad moved you guys to California, to L.A., right, for the show. What was that like? Because that's like a crazy age, you know, friends and school just must have been hard.
You guys were in a really cool school in New York, and your dad was, for the first season, he was in L.A., and then you guys moved?
Yeah. So, you know, I think we didn't move the first season because, you know, shows don't always go. And then I think very quickly after, like, the first episode aired, I mean, you guys will remember this better than I will, but it feels like it was immediate pandemonium. Mm-hmm. Like, it was immediately just like, this is a big deal. Like, this probably won't go off the air soon. And so when we moved for the second season, I was going into sixth grade, and we started at this really small school. And at first, it was really exciting because everybody wanted to be my friend. Mm-hmm. Because everyone watched the show and everyone, like, I feel like I was sort of the youngest age that was, you know, kids were like sneaking around to watch the show and not telling their parents. And I think it was really cool to have an opportunity going into a new school, which can feel lonely, to end up feeling really immediately popular. The only downside to that was it had nothing to do with who I was. Mm. And so that immediate popularity that was like essentially saccharine was based in nothing legitimate. And so I was very quickly dropped by all my friends at school. It was like turned into like absolute chaos, fully bullied. Like I went from really? Being super cool to, oh my God, devastate. Like fake accounts made as the beginning of like internet bullying. And which is, I'm really grateful for, because it made me work so much harder in terms of, it's when I really started focusing on theater. It's when I really started writing songs. It's when I just became determined to not have to stay in school. And I was like, maybe I'll just start working. Like I just worked my ass off. And I think that, you know, there's this, it's really interesting because I think it was something Adam had said to my brother and I, because my brother was sort of didn't dive in his head first as to like, I can make friends with everyone as I did. Mm-hmm. And he said something like, you know, if everyone wants to meet you, meet them. And then you get to decide who stays in your life. Wow. And you get to decide who the real ones are. And
Adam said that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like so.
Yeah.
Like it's, and it's been something that throughout, you know, you guys know, it's like, it becomes clear when you are having a successful moment in your career, how much more your phone rings than when you're not. Mm-hmm. And I think learning that skill so young at like, who wants to be friends with me because they want to find out what happens at the end of season 3, and who wants to be friends with me because like they also like listening to Broadway. Discerning that was a good skill, but it was hard.
But you were all, I mean, think about it. CG was 3, so she was completely oblivious, but you're in middle school during this, which is one of the most difficult, antagonistic, bitchy times in a young lady's life. And kids are finding every way they can, because they're still just trying to figure out life a little bit, every way they can. I had no idea that it was that difficult, just because like somehow like kids would be mean because, oh, you think you're so hot because your dad is Sandy Cohen kind of thing.
Yeah, it was everything.
Wow.
I think it's like when someone has when there's a shiny, it's like, you know, what is this saying? People throw rocks at things that shine. I literally think that's a Taylor Swift lyric. I don't even know if it's a saying, but it is a Taylor Swift lyric. And so, but it's that kind of thing where I think there was this light on me and I was trying everything on to try and fit in. I was trying to be, you know, edgy and cool and all of these different things that didn't authentically fit. And so the things people would say would be like, you know, you think, my favorite comment, it was from a fake YouTube account that was on a video of me singing. And it was,
25 years ago, Carrie Bradshaw started posing a slew of honest, provocative, relatable questions to the modern woman in her fictional column, Sex and the City. And just like her, the singles and hopeless romantics of New York still want to know, can you change a man? What constitutes cheating? And can you be friends with your ex? I'm Tara Llewellyn. You may know me from Gilmore to Say, a Gilmore Girls podcast. And after 10 years of navigating dating, friendships, career shifts, heartbreak, and of course, love in New York as Carrie did, I couldn't help but wonder, how relevant is Carrie's column 25 years later? Join me as I revisit this beloved series with some of my favorite New Yorkers and closest friends as we commiserate on first dates, one-night stands, love lost, friendship breakups, and everything in between, to bring Carrie's column to life and answer her questions from each episode of Sex and the City through a modern lens in my new weekly podcast, And Just Like Her.
The account was called You Suck Balls, and the comment was, anyone who's not related to you will tell you that this is pure unadulterated shit. Go find something more suitable for you and your man shoulders, like football. I'm terrible at football, but I do appreciate the tip. What are things like that?
I mean, you have a great sense of humor, obviously, about like everything in life and stuff. But those are the things that like these people write, and you know, they're whatever they are. They're bored, and it's just like, it's just so fucked, you know. And I think it just shows your upbringing, your support system, and everything else that you can like look at these things and be like, you know, just
yeah. You know. Yeah, Mick G made a point of saying we in our discussion with him about how different the early 2000s were till now, that everyone can be famous with an Instagram or TikTok account, and it was different then. But it's crazy that people have this anonymous platform to get something out, and that's so can be detrimental or considered bullying, or you know, and in so many ways, it's interesting to kind of look at it and say, wow, no matter what. What people say is a reflection of themselves. Mm-hmm. What they're exactly. commenting on is what they don't like in themselves, because we can't make everybody happy. We can't control people or anything. Yeah. And it's just, you know, because, yeah, it's, but I can only imagine at your age, that is really difficult, Catherine. So this, yeah, that is interesting. I was curious how this show affected you. Was mm-hmm. it just all wonderful? Because you do have a wonderful dad, and he's pretty Sandy-like at home, right?
Well, I think that was the interesting thing, was watching people's perception of what my life was, which is, mm-hmm. you know, I remember someone being like, yeah, I thought you were going to be a total brat before I met you, just because, you know, obviously your dad's famous, but... And I was like, sure, I get it, but meet my dad. Like, right. he has a tool belt on and a bucket hat, and he's fixing the toilet. Like, we're not, you know, so I think there's, and then I think definitely also as I began, you know, working a little bit more, there's of course the, well, you got this because of, and I'm not saying that there's not massive benefits to having a family that sort of knows what this is like, and mm-hmm. you get to know people, and you get to know how a set works, but... You know, I think that people like to assume, however, you know, close you are to a situation, that your life is perfect because you have mm-hmm. A, B, C, and D. And right. because your life is perfect, then you become this recipient of the criticism of their insecurities. Because if I had that person's thing, then my life would be perfect like theirs.
So after... after high school, you study music at USC. Mm-hmm. I mean, your life, I'm so proud of you. I am just so proud of you. And when I was in Toronto, your dad and I were doing separate series, and we would go out to dinner, and he'd tell me, or I was in New York one time. He's like, Catherine's song just got on Damages. Like, he was always sending me music and keeping me up on your life. And aww. So this is, but then you moved to New York, mm-hmm. and when you got to do Broadway, your dad told us that Ben was across the street doing his play at the same time.
So yeah, so this was during Jagged Little Pill. So this was only like a year ago. And one of my best friends, Ashley Park, or I guess a year and a half, whenever we were allowed to be on Broadway. One of my best friends, Ashley Park, was in this play with Ben. And we're on 44th Street. So we're like across 44th Street from each other. So my dressing room looks into their like lounge room. So Ashley and I naturally were planning on getting walkie-talkies, and like, we had all these really exciting plans. And then I was like thinking, I was like, I should send them something as like a, you know, welcome thing. And then I was like, how many opportunities am I going to have to welcome someone to this street with such an iconic phrase attached? So I got a cake sent to my theater, and I went to Duane Reade and got like, you know, frosting, and I wrote on it, "Welcome to 44th Street, bitch," and I sent it over to them.
That is so good.
It felt good.
That's awesome.
I'm nice. The Luke of Broadway, you know.
You're the Luke of Broadway.
I just need my puka shells.
Your puka shells. That's going on your resume as well. I'm the Luke of Broadway.
Awesome. Oh my gosh.
It was very fun.
But before we like get into the episode, yes. which we will soon, I just wanted your retelling or recollection of the first annual Camp Gallagher that
Greatest
went
weekend
down.
Of my life.
So we would like your version of that story and what your memories are from it.
Oh man, it was iconic. I remember it was after the first season. And you guys were in New York for Upfront. And I was in school. And you guys, I forget, there was two cars that went up. Rachel, I think we were in the same car.
Okay.
No, it was Adam. And you came up later.
And I came up later with Ben.
You came up later with Ben. So maybe it was all of us. And I was in the trunk of the car. You guys pulled up to my school. I was in the trunk with my brother and
that
my guitar.
That sounds really like, I don't know, morbid?
There were seats. There were seats.
Oh, okay. I've never heard this.
There were seats. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember being like, you know, we were a little too young for kids in my grade to be obsessed with the OC from like a fan point. But it was like the feeling as if my like really cool cousins were coming over for dinner. And I was like, so excited. You guys are all coming over. And I like got in the car and I remember being like, yeah, I'm like, we're all basically teenagers. Like, in my brain, I was just as hip as you guys, you know, for better, for worse for me. But then we drove up to Connecticut. I remember you guys were staying in the barn. Mindy, you were in the house with us.
Yeah.
I was sleeping in the attic. And I remember when we got there, Rachel, we were supposed to choreograph a dance and we never did.
What?
Yeah, we never did.
Well, hello, that needs to happen now.
I agree.
Once again, too much pot. Don't remember.
Too much pot. I think my best friend hooked up with Tate that weekend, maybe.
Yes, that's true. I remember it like eavesdropping in on all of the gossip, but then like, I was like a little spy. And then I remember someone, was it Brett was there?
So Brett was there, Harrison, yeah. Brett Harrison. Adam Brody's best friend who played Big Funny Guy on the OC.
Big Funny Guy.
Was there as well.
Iconic role.
Yes.
And so I think it was Brett's idea to play Capture the Flag. I think so. And then I remember in the epic, so the teams were split. I was given the role of protector of the flag, which basically meant that I hid by the flag, which inevitably meant that I was the last man standing. Oh. So if you're going to the point where I had been like hiding out by the brook, protecting this flag, and no one knew where I was. But I was the last one. So I tried sneaking through the brook to like try and, you know, tap everybody out. And they were building a human wall. I feel like it was like my dad, maybe Tate was on the I don't remember. What I do remember is that Ben was on the other team. Mm. And it came down to a showdown. And it was me, the 10-year-old with no athletic ability, versus Ben. And his sweet soul really let me think that there was a fight. Like, he really let me have like the fantasy that maybe there was some level of competition. There was none. I hadn't run a day in my life. But we had like a full-on football level showdown before he tagged me, and we lost. But to this day, it was my finest athletic feat.
We should tell people this was in pitch black, and we don't know your property. So, and that means that I was on the winning team because Ben won. So,
yeah.
I don't remember what team I was on.
That's probably, then you were probably on my team.
Probably. I would remember if we won.
Yeah.
So, Catherine, this episode, The Nana, if you've seen our podcast or listened, we like to kind of get into it and break it down. And because your dad was so. This is such a great episode for your dad.
Oh, yeah.
That I'd be interested to see if you can, you know, what your perception is on some of these things. But let's get into the episode, you guys. Want to?
Let's do it.
We've got a lot of themes going on in this episode between the Luke and Julie affair, Sandy's mother coming, and Summer's adorable education of the Seder, and then... The going to Chino because Marissa's in Chino. So those are the things that we're going to focus on in this episode.
So, you know, the episode opens and Marissa is missing. She learns about the affair that her mother had with her ex-boyfriend. Quite the shock.
I mean.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you first realized that you were going to be having an affair with Chris when you read the first script that was introduced in?
Oh, I was so excited for the storyline. It was, I mean, honestly, I mean, there. We saw in the last episode when we were talking, I realized it was like, I'm having so much fun with the storyline. And it wasn't, and only recently, I remember when I was shooting it, not thinking it was that big of a deal. It's just juicy storyline. We're actors. We get to portray something completely outside of, you know, the realm of anything that I would do, hopefully. But... Well, actually, I'm questionable, too. Anyway, so. No, it's just a great storyline. You know that the writers are writing for you. And Rachel and I both had that experience as the show started going on. We started getting great storylines. And every time the script would open, I'm like, whoop, they're writing for me. Better bring it, you know. So they're in the pool house. And then Luke and Ryan are just kind of going back and forth, trying to figure out, you know, is Marissa, you know, what's going on with Seth? And sure enough, he's sleeping. And his line of, it's my precious, you can't have it, is a pretty iconic Seth line. I mean, there's so many. There's too many to mention. But it just opens with this classic, you know, angst. And Marissa's always, I don't know if we're going to be team Marissa on this. Is she overreacting? Is she justified in what she's doing? But in that scene, when it's kind of an interesting thing, Julie walks in and I don't know if she already knows something. Marissa hasn't shown up I should assume that she knows that Marissa's missing, but she's already got kind of this not, you know, last episode she was all kind of happy and glowing. And this episode she's already, I don't know if that was a bad choice as an actor, indicating that she's already, this is something what indicating is. But she's like, what's going on? And Luke says they know. And Julie's reaction, I thought it was pretty, instead of going, becoming a mother, she instantly wants to defend herself. But then she gives that look over to Seth, like, what is she? And he's like, I just laughed out loud because her ego is so out of control. And the outfit, I don't know, orange hair, orange shirt, and Rocket Dog flip-flops.
Yeah.
It's just was one of the worst outfits and looks for me for the entire show. So there's
but
that.
You know someone's wearing it right now on the street, taking photos with it and doing a TikTok dance. Like, it's back. It's back.
Full force. I mean, fashion of the early aughts is in full force.
Right.
I know. I commented full on that, too. I was like, that is quite the look you got there.
Well, and there's certain things. I mean, just because we're talking about it, I mean, we're talking about some pretty heavy themes here, but in every episode, there's some hair and fashion and makeups that we comment on. But that combo, that trying to have that Avril Lavigne flat hair is not a good look on me. And it just looked weird. And the tanner and everything was just one big orange blob. So I used to have my mom
iron my hair with a clothing iron to straighten it when I was
what are you,
11.
Turn of the century.
I know. It's like the 60s, right? They used to do that. My mom was like, yeah, this is how all the girls did it. And so my mom would literally iron my hair with a clothing iron before like flat irons were, you know, mainstream or whatever.
Right. Anyway. The next thing I noticed when they're coming out of the pool house that Seth says, so what's the GPRA, Ryan? And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, game plan Ryan Atwood, and you're using initials now. And I thought, you know, acronyms, you know, I had to look this up. They go back to the 1800s, but when did we start using them in language, you guys? Because I didn't as a kid. Yeah, LOL.
Everybody started like texting and like, it's more like not texting, but like I chat, AIM, you know?
I still don't know. Like, people will write acronyms and I'm always like, what does this mean? I feel like I'm 80. I don't know. Well,
there's a lot.
I mean, whether it was the FBI or POTUS, but now people are using them for full sentences and phrases. And, yeah, you know,
I feel like it's gone full circle. Like the young ones, they don't use, like I use them because I was like had my little screen name and would do that. But now the kids below, it's not cool to say LOL. Like, I've been outpooled now. I'm no longer young. Like, I realized recently. It's gone full. So people use full words now again.
Oh, wow.
I'm still looking them up. I'm still looking IRL up. What's IRL mean?
In real life.
Yeah, I am. Such a dork.
But yeah, I'd say Seth was like, you know, ahead of the game on that one.
Well, and I think this is Josh's.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Yeah, Josh is paying attention and all these little details that now, 18 years later, we can say, hey, that is real. I mean, there's so many things that he picked up on that actually
Josh still does that. Happened. Like, he's friends with, like, younger, and he's like, I got to keep, you know, my hand on the pulse, my finger on the pulse, whatever the expression is.
When we go into the Cohen kitchen and Haley has prepared this deliciously redundant pancakes, waffles, leavened bread feast, I noticed that Seth throws Kelly or Kirsten a blueberry. Kelly is extremely disciplined with her sugar, and she doesn't eat sugar, and she doesn't eat carbs. I mean, for a lot of different reasons. She was like our guru when it came to health and everything.
She had that big bowl of salad.
Yeah.
She remember that?
Yes.
She got us into the woman that would deliver us all food that was really healthy every day. Mm-hmm. But I thought about it and I was like, you know, even if the food was good, it looks good on camera, but you know, it's just been sitting out all day long. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was going to text Kelly and I didn't get around to it. It was like, I wonder if there's any chance that she was supposed to get some of the pancakes, but then he threw her a blueberry and that's the one thing she would eat, you know. Anyway.
I love that. That feels on brand. It's very on brand.
Talking about leaven. So this is when Sandy enters and he is just beside himself. We've got to get all the bread out of the house. And because the Nana is coming and they must prepare for the Passover. And if she sees all this leavened bread, she'll plots. Which means to collapse. Did you know this? I didn't know
it. She'll plot.
She'll plots. She'll plots. And Seth says, I love when Nana comes and suddenly Dad's all Jewish again. That's a great line. Right?
That is.
But you guys are bagel families, aren't you? I mean, you're a bagel family, big time, right?
It's my favorite food on the planet. It's the greatest food in the world. I mean, we can't keep them in the house because they don't last. Like, bagels are, I mean, the closest you can get to God, I think.
Oh, yes, the schmear is real. You did a TikTok with your dad that got a lot of actual press, I noticed. It was like everyone picked up on you saying what happened in the TikTok.
I walked in, well, so I didn't realize, I think, how many people cared about Sandy Cohen still. You know, it's been a while. And I also think that I understood the hype of the show. I was always like, oh my God, like the teens are the hot ones. Like that. I didn't get that people even noticed that my dad was on it until the last few years. I saw this, there's this content creator named Tanks, and she did this thing of like TV zaddies, like da da da. And then she said, and so I duetted that because it was funny. And that sort of got this idea going where I was like, I bet people wonder if he's like that in real life. So I was sort of filming the camera and I walked into the kitchen and I was like, yeah, people are always wondering, is he really like Sandy Cohen in real life? And like, honestly, no, he's just, and then I turned around and he was like, I schmeared it for you.
It's awesome.
That
yeah, it was very nice.
That's great.
You
and
didn't.
Now I just harass him with TikToks.
Right. You did another okay. one where somebody said, "This is the most beautiful, nostalgic, take you back kind of music," and it was da na 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 na, and his head popped up. What?
Yeah, right before that, he goes, "You're not posting this." And I was like, "No, I just want to show you what I mean." And I was like, "Just listen to this." And so I was obviously recording. And so then he literally like that, his little reaction was like totally natural. And then I was like, yeah, I'm definitely not posting it.
It was so cute.
That's really
cool. It was
my
awesome.
Payback.
Yeah. Payback.
But my payback.
So back to the episode when Sandy says that his, that they're going to host Seder and that he told her that they do it every year, the fear in Kelly's face, like what? Oh my gosh. Because, and I don't know what it all entails. I know it's long. So is it?
Yes.
Do you know?
Very involved.
Yes. It's long. It's been a while since I've been to one, but yes.
Michael Lang directed this episode and we had him on as a guest and nothing is really a first. There's just, I think, similar things done in a new way. And I think Orange County, because here, I know for all the listeners who think it's funny how many times I say that I'm from Orange County. I didn't even know what a matzo ball soup was when I moved to Hollywood in 1988. I didn't know. There's just, we didn't have, so it was like, so it's not necessary. So this Jewish, there are Jewish people in Orange County, but I didn't know any. So I think that this was, this is a, it's a new take on it. And the Chrismica and having Passover in a show like this is not necessarily, I mean, like, not necessarily was a constant storyline in different shows. So,
right.
But that leads us to Summer's bedroom, Rachel, with one of the cutest scenes with you, right? Where you want to meet the Nana?
Oh yes, I want to meet the Nana, and he's like, no, basically that you cannot meet the Nana. And he's like, and says Seder, and I say like, what's Seder? And he's like, dinner? I don't know. She's, yes, Summer knows nothing about the Jewish religion, and Seth is terrified for her to meet the Nana.
But you say, I love old people. They're so cute. And I wonder, is that you? Did Josh take that from you?
It's very possible. it is very possible that he did. I do love old people, and I do think they're very cute.
So when we go into the Kirsten and Sandy's bedroom, I think this is a really funny way to show Sandy's neurosis about his mother. He's stripping the bed of the fancy sheets. And it's like, why is he stripping sheets? Isn't the house fancy enough? But he all of a sudden has this, quote, Seth-like monologue about his mother and what she's going to do. And you know, and this is such a great episode about how we get to know Sandy through the Nana and his background and where he came from. And it's very endearing. It's very endearing because he really has been, you know, he's taken all the best things from the Nana. Right. And what we'll come to find, you know, the fact that he adopted Ryan and he works for, you know, the little guy and he works for the underdog. But now his mother is the most judgmental person he knows and she's going to judge him for his life. And I guess what I'm gathering is that they haven't seen each other. We'll find out that very much. And I just think it's funny that he's stripping sheets. It's hysterical.
Yeah,
I kind of love it because he's so the fish out of water, you know, sort of like he's the older fish out of water, older than Ryan, therefore. And I feel like it's the first time, you know, he usually keeps his cool and he's there with the quippy one-liner and he's very comfortable being sort of like, these aren't my people. But then you see him in a situation where it's like with his mother, with his family, and his neuroses is like at an all-time high. And it's just very, you know, interesting to see, like, I won't claim that, but now that I'm in the thing that I do claim, I'm entirely uncomfortable.
Right.
So it's like, is the comfort in the being that fish out of water or in the family? Honestly, neither.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's so, I just love, I mean, I tell people this all the time. Comedy is as much a part of life as tragedy. I mean, that's our two masks. You can find comedy in almost every situation. And once, you know, when Sandy walks into the kitchen, he's like, who's going to the airport with me to get the Nana? And everybody's just like, and he's like, I get it. You're not ready for the Nana. No one's ever ready for the Nana. That woman is scary. It's like, how many times is the word scary used? And I mean, let's talk about the amazing Linda Lavin here.
Yeah.
I mean,
she comes.
How much do you guys love her?
Oh, gosh. I mean, she's so...
Six Tony nominations?
Is it like, six?
Okay. Yeah.
She's Tony one and Golden Globe winner.
Yes. She's just phenomenal. And watching this episode back, I mean, I cried a lot. I know I cry many times watching the show, but like this was like, you know, because it's like that fine line, like you're watching a show that's kind of credited as a teen soap, but then you're opening it up to all of these real life things. And I was just like, I was totally sucked in. I was all in on it. And I mean, I cried a lot. It was just dealing with all these things that they aren't easy, but it was acted so well. Your dad and Linda Lavin. I mean, I was really just very proud of our show in this episode.
Absolutely. Yeah. I reached out to Patrick Rush, our casting director, because I was curious how they, you know, picked such an amazing woman. I watched her. I remember watching her on Alice. Rachel, you liked, you said you watched her where?
Oh, Muppets Take Manhattan was the first, that would be my first love of Linda Lavin's because I'm a huge fan of that movie.
Iconic. But
yes.
Patrick shared, he said, I remember casting Linda. I feel like she was our number one choice because there were other names that were either never going to do it or they were going to have casting sessions. Mm. And then he said he thinks, because, you know, this was 18 years ago, he thinks he had to show Josh who she was, that she used to be famous. But one of the funny things was that he said that she didn't have an agent and manager at the time. So the only number he had was her home number. So he called her at home and offered her the role. And then her response was, she wanted to look pretty, not just like an old Jewish grandma. And she wants to look, she wanted to look as pretty as the kids on the show. How funny is that?
I love that. He just called her home phone number, her landline.
that just doesn't happen. Although Patrick has called me for a role before and said, are you available? So he, yes, so he has done that, right?
That is
reached out to, apparently after this, Michael Lang said that he became friends with Linda Lavin. Your dad told me that he went to go see Hal Prince with her. It sounds like she's friends with everyone. Are you friends with her, Catherine?
I wish. Oh my God. I do feel like that's what happens sort of in the New York theater community, though. It's like once you've sort of done a show, everyone knows everyone. It's like high school. We're all in a 10 block radius. And if you're doing a show at the same or similar time as someone else, like, you know each other, kind of, or at least you just admire them from across the bar.
Right.
Right.
Either way.
Right.
No, she just elevates the show. And
she does.
I remember feeling so proud. Linda Lavin's coming on our show. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So she comes into this episode and, you know, she's the scary Nana. It's all prefaced with how like horrifically terrifying she is. And she comes and she's completely opposite. You know, just happy and loving California and so happy to be there. And so everyone's obviously like, what the fuck is up?
It was such a great introductory scene.
Yes.
And I got to tell you guys, as I was watching it, I had this big smile on my face and I had this realization that I went, I miss that. Doing a scene with an ensemble, it's well written. There's just this great banter, great dialogue. I remember that feeling of just being excited to go to work and work with that because you really are creating that family. I love her line to Haley, oh, the bad seed. I love you the best. And it's almost like she's put on her social worker hat where she's nice to everybody. I mean, truly, if she's a successful social worker, she's really nice to everyone out to her clients, but maybe not so nice domestically. I know people like that.
You know, we learn why she's being so cheery. And honestly, this was a huge bomb dropped that she has very advanced lung cancer. But this is one of the examples is like, okay, we're dealing with like real stuff. I mean, we're always dealing with real stuff, but it just kind of took it to that next level with, you know, things that aren't easy. And it made me very uncomfortable watching.
Oh,
it's like, oh God.
This is something that I didn't want to skip over, that Seth is so flustered in the pool house because the Nana is nice. And he's just using all these, you know, probably comic book analogies that he points out how his mom and his Nana are two different, you know, super different people. And, you know, Marissa's gone this whole time. Ryan's just focused on where is Marissa? You know, Seth says the Nana has never exactly cared for the Kirsten. Here's with the again with everything. And I think that's, and then all of a sudden the light bulb goes off like, ooh, I think I know where Marissa must be. I love this scene. We should mention this one when Sandy wants his mom to cook, but she's not interested. And Seth makes the joke about, he's like, but what? Ryan could, you know, maybe Ryan could have gone to a Seder before. There are Jews in Chino. Why do you think they want a P.F. Chang's? That That
was a great
comedy. It's like Josh just keeps driving it, you know. He just, because Gina was so upset, you know. Well, anyway.
Yeah, he really.
That was a great moment.
It was.
Yeah. But then this is the next moment where we actually see that there was some strife in his childhood when she says, you know, the whole neighborhood had to raise him because I was working, and he's like, well, somebody had to do it. And it's, you know, and then there's a mention of a brother and sister, which I don't think we ever see again.
I was wondering myself.
I was shocked at that.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what? Well, brother and a sister? Here's the spinoff.
Would watch.
It's so funny. It's so cute. Your dad is doing an incredible job here. And I mean, I was told through the grapevine that he was really involved. He got really involved in the script with the writer and the director. And so when he's like, I got to find out. And Kirsten's like, no, I love her. Don't. And you hear ding dong. And he goes to get it. And she goes, I'll get it. And he goes, he puts his hands up like, who is this woman? And then,
yeah. And then it kind of makes you think, like, when she says, like, he was raised by a village, it's like, oh, that's why he had so much sympathy for Ryan. Mm. It's like the first moment that I understood, like, oh, that's why he really went out of his way, because here was a kid who wasn't being raised by anyone.
Right.
And is, well, like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that we, you know, he adopted like her generosity and her social ideals, but mm-hmm. he focused it more on his kids. And what we're finding is that she didn't focus it on hers.
Right.
But then, and those are his resentments. But then as the episode goes on, we find out that, you know, single mom, she didn't, you know, he does have a little bit more of a lap of luxury living the way he does. Mm-hmm. So he definitely took, and she even admits it. She's like, I never thought to do that. You've taken it another step further.
Right.
Right.
Like you brought.
Yeah. That was such a sweet moment.
Yeah. One of them into your home. I know. I thought it was a sweet moment as well.
So she opens the door to one of the cutest scenes in the episode. Yeah, it's you.
I bring macaroons.
In that hat. That hat.
The beanie.
Was it the beanie?
It was like the knit one.
It looked identical to a hat I bought my first trip to New York City in high school. We went on a Broadway musical theater trip, our drama program in high school. I know. I'm trying to remember what we saw. We saw many, many musicals. What play was Natalie Portman doing? Maybe it was Anne Frank. Anyway, we saw like plays and musicals, and I went to Strawberry. Does that store still exist in New York?
Wait, Anne Frank with Linda Lavin? I'm sorry. Yes, right?
Wait, what? Was she in it?
I think she won a Tony for it.
What?
Maybe it was not the same production, but yes. I might be wrong, but
there's a lot of full circles happening right now. Can't even. What? Yeah. We'll have to look that
up. Something's in the air. Yes. Yeah, we're going to look it up.
Maybe Diana can look that one up for us.
But anyway, I bought that, like, basically that identical hat on my first trip to New York City. That was the moral of the story.
It's interesting that Seth is so protective that, you know, and because the audience at this moment has yet to see the scary Nana. Mm-hmm. But he actually believes he's either going to, is he protecting or embarrassed? Like, I still don't quite get what he's worried about. Or maybe he really is going to protect you. He thinks that she's just going to lash out.
Well, Seth is famously conflict averse.
Famously
conflict averse. Can't handle the stress.
Yeah, no, he cannot. He cannot deal.
Can't deal.
Right. Oh, Diana Seth said it was Anne Frank. Deal. Hold on. That's crazy. What?
Yeah.
What? Like, that's so weird.
That's weird.
That's weird.
That's weird.
That is weird. Because I was like, I hadn't even thought of that. And I was like, yeah, New York trip. Oh, this play. See? The fucking universe sometimes, I tell you.
That's witchy.
Okay. It's also the trip. Rami Malek and I were on this trip. And that's one of the pictures from the trip that, like, got me in so much trouble. Rami and I are totally back to being cool. But that was the trip where that picture was taken, and we saw Anne Frank that Linda Lavin was in, and what the fuck is happening? Okay, anyways, talking about this episode. We've gone all over the place, but you know, there's just a lot happening.
It's a lot to cover. It's been 18 years.
It's been 18 years. Holy
but
Christ.
I love, yeah, we can, but before we can continue with the Nana, the engagement party, when Ryan figures out that Marissa's at Teresa's mm-hmm. and it turns out to be an engagement party and I thought this was funny. Teresa's mom comes out and it's actually a different actress than the first time. Did you, I don't know if you noticed that, but they recast it. The first actress was Gina Gallego, and the next one was Cynthia Avila.
Anyway. I love a subtle recast.
Subtle, like, yeah. No one's going to notice.
No one's going to talk about it.
Just slipping on in.
But, I mean, to comment on Marissa, do we think that she's justified
in taking off? It's a pretty big fucking thing to find out your mom's, like, smashing your ex-boyfriend.
I would have burned a house down. Like, I don't well,
I don't know. I mean, it's a little weird
it's
that
very
she
OC
goes,
appropriate.
Yeah, well, it's a little, OC appropriate. It's a little weird that she goes to Teresa, you know?
Yeah.
But it is true because who says it? Is it Eddie? Who points out?
Yeah, Eddie says it.
Or Teresa says it
yeah.
to him that she came here. Someone says it that she
the, like, only, the only place
that he could, he's the only one that could find her here.
Eddie says it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I thought that, and it's true, you know? And I actually like that this is kind of the rekindling of Ryan and Marissa, this whole storyline.
Well, and it's the beginning, because I actually had to look, I was like, wait, are they back together? I don't think they technically get back together, but that line that he has when he's like, well, what will I do without you? And, you know, when she breaks down and it's very sad.
When she breaks down and he won't let her go and he just holds her.
She's hurting.
It made me cry too.
Cried.
For sure.
I just am not crying lately.
Sorry. I'm crying a lot.
No.
You can have a line.
No, I mean, I definitely, Misha just is such a proficient actress. She can do that, pull out that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She definitely tugs at the heartstrings. But speaking of crying, you know, Sandy, he just won't let it go. I'm just this Jewish Mary Poppins act. I'm just not buying it. What mm-hmm. are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden she just lashes out and she's like, you're not helping people. You're opening restaurants. And then she drops that bomb that she has advanced cancer and she only has 4 to 6 months and she came to say goodbye. What? Yeah.
That was a big one. And she's refusing treatment and, you know, there's a whole lot.
It brings up this is when the show, I just really applaud that they bring up these themes that aren't just, you know, simple teenage storylines. Yeah. We're bringing up mortality and we're bringing up, you know, when a loved one is sick and they refuse treatment. And the family says, please get treatment. It's almost you're asking the sick person not to be selfish because we want time with you. And these are some pretty poignant, you know, life lessons. And it's done in such a lovely way. And then Sophie's, you know, she's making her brisket, but she doesn't want to talk about it. And she doesn't want to talk to anyone. It gets really, really heated. Mm-hmm. And it has that famous, famous thing where she just starts, I hate California and I hate Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
How brilliant was she in that?
That flip was like chilling. I mean, that was like so brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. Everything about her performance in that moment was just like, oh.
Doesn't it pay off, right? Like she's being so nice. And then it's like, now here it comes. Like the audience has no idea. And then it turns into this, and it was really satisfying, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, when she has this lovely, lovely scene, she knocks, or, you know, after she has this conversation with Sandy and they're smoking, and she's smoking, she's like, you know, and doesn't it feel weird to see anybody smoking at all? Even in real life?
Oh, in life, yeah. Yeah, I just been talking about this. I'm like, who even smokes anymore?
Right. But I mean, it's just... But then, you know, and that we find out, you know, he brings up, you know, when I left home at 16, I was surprised you noticed. And you just realize that all of a sudden there's a lot of healing and all of that time. And now she's could be terminal. doesn't some of that just, you just want to get rid of it and let it go.
Right.
And it's a lesson to just say, hug your loved ones, especially if the year we've had and people, you know, people can pass like that. And it's just that we hold on as human beings to such trivial things. And it doesn't, the past is the past. It doesn't make sense to hold on to something that, you know, let's focus on what's here right now. Mm-hmm. And so then she, but Seth overhears that.
Yeah.
Overhears that she's,
and
that
you
she's
see
dying.
His little face, you know, hearing that his grandma's like gonna peace out and not try to do anything about it. It broke my heart seeing his little face. I'm like, so sad. But this leads us to like one of my favorite scenes in this episode with Seth and the Nana in his bedroom. I just thought it was so beautiful and so beautifully acted on both of their parts. I was just really impressed with this scene when she comes to him to talk to him about it. What was so great about Brody in particular was how he could do the comedy and do the real, you know, emotional stuff as well. And this was,
I feel like that's true for even like everyone on the show, the whole show. I think one of the things that was so magical about it is that it wasn't a comedy and it wasn't a drama. It was this thing that mirrored real life in all of its humorous moments and tragic moments, and how those always, you know, someone always makes a joke when someone's dying.
Right.
Someone always makes a joke when the, you know, and I think that that scene was like a perfect example of like the show at its absolute best is these, you know, real people feeling things in the way they do.
And, you know, Seth always, the dynamic that he has with his dad, or say in this case with the Nana, it's adults don't always know what's best. You know, even a young teen boy can say, hey, can you look at it this way, this perspective? And adults are, you know, if they're a healthy, mature adult, they could say, hey, maybe I've been looking at this the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Now, he's using the Jewish guilt on her quite well, but it's, you know, her thought was, I want to have this time with you without knowing that I'm sick. Mm-hmm. And it's almost taking something away from that. And it's not, and she's finding out that her family's not okay with it. We want you to get treatment.
There's like this going on, you know, at the Cohen's house with Passover and the Seder. And then you have everything going on at the engagement party and Marissa and Luke showing up and trying to get her to come home. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing there, Luke? Like,
yeah, Luke, like, go home.
Go home. You're the last person
home, Luke,
that she wants to see right now, other than you, Melinda.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like this idea that he has to get absolution from Marissa. I have to talk to her. I have to talk to her. Give her some space.
Yeah.
But of course, it makes for that, you know, OC fisticuff, you know, but this time it comes from Marissa. Like, good for you, smack. But then this comes to one of my favorite scenes.
What?
Well, just Summer and Kirsten.
Yeah, I was just going to say, was this our first scene together, just the two of them?
It feels like it. It feels to me like it's the first, just, yes.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And you grab that carrot.
Apparently it's a like theme where I just take carrots and that's like my snack of choice on screen
like
on
you,
the show.
You
it's
did
happened
it.
Before.
In the Rooney episode.
In the Rooney episode at the concert, I'm just chewing on a carrot. You know, not so easy to talk with a carrot. They're loud. I'm not really sure what motivated me to make this decision.
And chances are you had to do it more than once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Carrots.
But then this is actually my favorite scene with Kirsten and the Nana, because Kirsten, you know, a lot of times, this reminded me of Kelly in real life. She is strong. She is brutally honest. She doesn't mince words. And, but Kirsten can be extremely polite and she's going to say the right thing. But she gently kind of uses that, once again, Jewish guilt, like, you know, by your choice. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, he made a choice. She's saying that Sandy made a choice. It was, you know, either the Bronx or New York, or, you know, and it's like, no, he didn't make a choice. Why can't, you know, anyway, she's sticking up for her husband and basically saying, what's your part in all of this, Nana? why, you know, why is it broken like this? You know, and somehow they're kind of, they're breaking apart that tough exterior.
So we also, Marissa, we get, Ryan gets her to leave Chino, right? Yeah. So she's coming home, and so this scene where she comes home and Mindy, you open the door, like, you're not going anywhere, young lady, you know, whatever you say. And I'm like, I don't think you have much ground to stand on right now there, Mama, right. Mama Cooper.
Mama Coop.
And I love that Misha or Marissa is just like, you know, sorry, where does she say? She's just like, that she threatens.
She says, I'll tell Caleb, I'll tell Dad. What if I tell everyone, you know, why? Yeah. And instead of taking responsibility like a mature adult and saying, I was wrong, I'm sorry, she says, fine, get your stuff and get out.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. What a nasty Julie we're seeing right now, because she operates on ego and pride.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And she's really, really fucked up. Sorry. This is Julie at her worst. This is Julie at her worst.
I mean, it was pretty brutal.
Right.
Yes.
So brutal.
But this leads us to. Well, the pool house, Summer's reciting the Haggadah. I like the, all the chuz that were being thrown around in this episode.
Right.
And Ryan shows up with Marissa. Thank God.
Ugh.
Yes, I know. But, you know, and I thought this, and I know, Mindy, I think we shared this, that Sandy comes, you know, they're all going to go and sit down for the Seder and Sandy asks Ryan, how was everything at home? And Ryan says, you tell me, I was in Chino.
Oh, kill me.
I just can't. It was just really so sweet. And I thought the same thing. I was like, man, really pulling on the heartstrings here. It leads us that everyone comes to the Seder. And I also thought that was awesome. You know, Marissa's there. Everyone's invited. It's like, it was just a very beautiful little thing. Seeing them
chosen
all sit
family.
Down to the Seder, and they aren't going to eat for another 6 hours.
Right.
Is it really
that long? Gosh.
I don't know. It is long. There's a lot of things that happen. I remember as a kid, you dip the parsley in the salt water that represent the tears, and the somebody hides the matzah. I forget his name. And the kids, the littlest kid has to find the matzah. Right, that was always my favorite. I can't remember the name. Oh my God, I'm embarrassed.
Elijah.
I'm embarrassed. I apologize to my Jewish heritage that I can't remember who hides the matzah. But anyway, yes.
It was a beautiful end. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And Michael Lang, do you remember he told us, and he reminded me that he shared that whole scene as Aqualung's Take Me Home plays, it was done in a one-shot crane pullback. And I thought it was quite lovely, but he seemed to remember that Josh wasn't happy about it. Because he probably pictured it with, a close up of everybody, of everybody of the whole scene. But
yes,
but
I thought it was just,
speaking of the music though, every single song that was in this episode and all, it's like, they're just canon, like they're icon. It's really like, I forget that this show launched like an entire generation of like emo standards.
Totally. But yeah, this episode, whew, it was emotional, guys. We went on an emotional roller coaster together.
It was all the things that people love about the OC, like done to its absolute peak. Like it had all of the favorite moments.
Yeah.
Just perfectly
a lot
executed.
Was covered.
So do you remember, I just have to ask you, do you remember when you actually, were you watching it when you were 10 or did you wait until you were a little bit older and watch?
I think I was. Like, I definitely remember watching the pilot before it was on the air a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was watching it every week.
Wow.
Like, I definitely, because I remember it was this weird thing because, while on one hand, I had immense, like, understanding that it was a cultural moment. It was also like, you know, again, my cool cousins are doing this thing and I want to watch it. You know,
right.
Like it felt like this very small thing to me that I was so excited to get to see. You know, I visited set like a lot as a kid And so I feel like I would watch, I loved seeing something on the clothing rack and then watching it be put on an actor and then having that be on TV in however many months, you know?
Yeah.
So the whole thing, I loved watching it.
Did you, CG became very disillusioned with set in her teen years. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, takes so long. At one point she wanted to be an actress and she's like, no, I'm done. You work way too many long hours. It's long, it's boring. And do you remember being on set and going, this is fun, you know, there was a shelf life to the fun part, or did you always enjoy it?
I really always loved it.
I love it.
I really did. I think, and it was, what was cool, and I think this is probably the biggest advantage to having an actor parent, is when it was time for me to go to set as an actor, which my first thing on camera ever was You. And
Wow.
Yeah, I'd never been on camera before. I was like, I hope this works. And it was so nice of them to let me do that. And I remember calling my dad. The only thing I didn't know was how the call sheet worked. So I called him and I was like, what's CPU? What's the DOOD? Like, I was like asking all these questions. And so that was really helpful. But I loved being able to show up and knowing, like, that's a camera operator. And that's, you know, an understanding, you know, a call sheet.
Well, for everyone listening, a call sheet is what they send you, the actors and the crew and everybody working on the show, to show you what you're shooting that day, the scenes you're shooting, the order you're doing them. It has your call time, which is what time you show up. Like, it's all the information you need to work that day, essentially.
And if you've never seen it, it looks like it's in a foreign language.
Yes.
It's really... It's so confusing. But yeah, it was really like, I loved being able to have that sort of familiarity with it. And also, I think, to sort of not be sort of excited by the glamour of it. You know, there's someone there asking if you'd like coffee and what you'd like for lunch. And remembering that, like, my hours as an actor are shorter than everyone else on that set. So when they say it's time, you know, we're ready for you, it is my job to get off my ass immediately and show up and know my lines. And, like, I think those things that I learned from my dad, I've just done it so long, about, like, I'm so lucky I get to be here and I get to say these words and I get to be in a scene, that I'm going to show every single person on this set with, like, as much, there's no, like, I'm an actor, I'm special because people want to take my photo. It's like, I'm lucky that you guys are the best at what you do, and you guys, and we all get to do this together.
I love that you make the point of that it's really important to not be self-centered when it comes to doing what we do, to understand. And when it's difficult, it's not just you that is going through a difficult time. The whole crew is going through that same difficult time.
We have some trivia. Catherine.
Hello, you beautiful creatures. It's so good to see you guys.
Oh.
You ready for some trivia about dear old dad?
Oh, boy.
Dear old dad.
This one's going to get me in trouble.
I think you got this.
Okay, we'll see.
Let's start with the first one. Which TV movie was your dad not in? White Mile? Terrible Joe Moran? Love and Lies, or Betrayed by Love?
Was he not in?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. White Lies? I know he's in Terrible Joe Moran. White Mile? There was another lie. White Mile was the first one you said.
White Mile, Terrible Joe Moran, Love and Lies,
he was in
Betrayed
that.
By Love.
I think White Mile.
Is that your final answer?
Know. No. Definitely not. Wow. Love and Lies. Was this the only one I didn't say?
It was Betrayed by Love. Yep. Betrayed by Love was the one he was not in.
Okay, please tell me at least the first two that I said happened before I was born.
I'm going to say yes. Probably. I have no idea.
Probably.
We'll say yes. We'll go with yes.
Okay.
This will be an easy one. Your parents have been married for how many years?
A million.
A million.
They were married in 1984. Six? It's 9/7/6/5/1985. 4/3. Oh my God. 1983. My favorite year. Ever. Because that's when they got married.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, so 38 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. May 7th.
Mm-hmm. It really has been a million years.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Okay, next one. Okay. This one's pretty funny. This performance, okay. Your father called his career low.
I don't know if this is true. Did he say this, Diana? How do we know about this? I'm curious if he
said
it.
Like there's no way I can answer this without getting anyone in trouble. It's in an article. Oh, boy.
Oh, okay.
Well, he's given a few performances around the house and musicals he's made up that I would consider his career low. okay. Okay, I have no idea. I feel like any answer I give would get him in trouble if it's wrong.
Well, what we have here is the 1992 Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls.
Oh, yeah, that was a tough one for him. That's so fun. But he was really, it's so crazy because all of my friends who are theater geeks,
who was he? Who did he play in it?
He was Sky Masterson. I saw him in 92 on stage.
He was brilliant.
Yes.
He was like, my friends think like, regard his performance as Sky Masterson as like one of the most iconic performances they've seen.
Mm-hmm. I would feel like he would be an incredible Sky.
He was. He really was.
So why does he call it his career low? Oh.
Yeah, that's why.
It was a critical and commercial hit, but Gallagher felt boxed in by the director, prevented from giving his best. Rough treatment led him to avoid musicals for 25 years.
Wow. He had a hard time. It was a hard situation. And I think, you know, it speaks a lot to he has been so, you know, he's seen so many sort of both wonderful and painful moments for him in his career, which is why, like with me, whenever things like are good or whenever there's that Mike Nichols quote, he said it to my dad when my dad was like looking for advice. And Mike said, as long as your kids know that things that start poorly don't always end that way. And things that start well don't always end that way. Mm. They'll be okay. Mm. And I think that, you know, sort of this, you know, having this dream role and this dream show with this dream, everything, you know, there's a lot of things going to the equation.
How many Broadway shows has your dad done?
Eight or nine.
This says five musicals, five plays. Ten.
Okay. Let's Pal Joey. No. He did Pal Joey. Country Girl. Doll's Life. Guys and Dolls, on the 20th Century. Yeah, he's done a lot. Oh, wow. Yeah,
Grease. Didn't he do Grease?
I know he always says over 3,000 performances.
Oh,
that's what he goes by.
He goes, over 3,000. Over 3,000 performances on Broadway.
Didn't he do Grease and Hair, too? No, Grease.
Grease was his, so he did, Hair was his Broadway debut, and he was in the ensemble. He was the understudy. And then while they were in previews, he got Danny Zuko on the national tour of Grease. So he went on the national tour and then took that to Broadway. So then he ended up with Danny Zuko on Broadway after after being in Hair. Yeah.
That's cool. Let's give you one more trivia.
Okay.
What celebrity was your dad too dumbstruck to speak to? You can't live with or without this answer.
That's a hint.
I can't live with or without you.
Bono?
Yeah!
Wait, I feel like they never... my dad took us all to a U2 concert when they were doing... when you guys were doing the OC. I didn't know he was too... scared to ever meet him.
He apparently stayed at a hotel where I guess U2 owns a hotel, and Bono opened the door for him, and he was too dumbstruck to even say anything, and he just went
that's so
and walked
cute.
By
the hotel in Dublin.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow, that's so cute.
And you got it.
Guys, I failed a quiz on my dad.
No, you didn't. You just got that one right.
That's still a failing grade.
I think you did great. It's just been so fun catching up with you and seeing you, like I said, as such a beautiful, young, accomplished woman. And I just feel proud. Like, I'm just like our little girl's all grown up and just so impressive.
We really were a family. This was such a great, great theme. This episode for me is the theme is just family, because at that time we did spend a lot of time together when we worked that closely. And you just create a bond that will always be there. And
so absolutely.
And then
my really cool cousin.
I'm just happy you think that we're cool.
Oh, when I tell you, no one's cooler forever. The people who are cool to you at 10, I mean, the ways you guys have informed my life, the list is endless.
Oh, man. Catherine.
And we should have to do that dance.
Oh, we're doing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
just
that's
to
not.
To be clear, that does have to happen.
100% happening.
Yeah.
I'm giving you a
big hug.
I know, and I want to see this beautiful apartment that's in the New York Times.
I love that by the way, your dad was more proud of you, like, caulking and installing the air conditioning then.
That is the truth. That is the real truth. I was like, he's literally on FaceTime as I'm, like, hunched over and with my toolkit that he bought me and insisted I have. And he's giving me tips on what kind of, like, you know, plaster to get.
That's very cute.
It was a team effort.
Next time we're in NYU or NYU, New York City. It's not university.
We're going to the University
of College. Yeah.
We want to come see your place.
Yes. Anytime.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review Welcome to the OC Bitches wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube or now on HBO Max. Please leave those reviews. We may just share our favorites on Instagram. Thank you.
Bye. Shopify presents cool sheets from AHA to...
I suffered from the wrong kind of hot in bed. Heat-induced insomnia. That was my AHA moment. Bed sheets that keep you cool. Then I thought, how do I even sell bed sheets? That's when I had the idea that made it all possible. Signing up on Shopify.
This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh. And
that's I'm Rabia
Chaudhry. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of. Obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.